It's time to step into the Coming Out Lounge, a cool, safe space to be true to your sexual self, with your host, Rick Clemens. Rick has helped hundreds of people come out of the closet, and now each week he's bringing you cool insights for loving and accepting yourself, boosting your self-confidence, and living a guilt-free, purpose-filled life on the other side of the closet doors. Cuddle up with yourself and get ready for heartwarming coming out stories, ideas for living authentically, and tips for being fully self-expressed. Now here's your host, Coming Out Coach Rick.
Hey, closet busters and closet dwellers. We are back for another episode of the Coming Out Lounge. And you know what? You've heard me say this. We've all got coming out stories. That's what I preach. That's what I teach. And yes, that's what I help people do, is come out to live their powerful truth. But I have to be really honest with you right now. As a man, I have to admit, if it were true that my boner, yes, my penis was broken, I'd have a really hard time swallowing my pride, no pun intended there, and admitting that, oh my God, my man bone just ain't working. But thankfully, knock on wood, so far my bone ain't broken. But according to our guest today, and he's a big, handsome guy, most men, gay or straight, will experience some form of broken boner blues. Yes, I'm talking about the big erectile dysfunction in their lifetime. It just seems to be par for the course for most of us guys. And so now that we've set that up, I want you to imagine, though, that this was the way you were born, that this was part of your life from the very moment you broke free from the freaking womb and slipped down the birth canal, that you had erectile dysfunction. And it was your destiny. Well, guess what? That's his story. He's sticking with it. His name is Daniel Canfield. He's an erectile dysfunction expert. He is got a great podcast called The Broken Boner Radio. He's going to get real. He's going to get raw. I say he's going to get naked with us today, because anytime we come out, we're getting naked in our truth. He's going to tell us about his journey of living with his broken boner. Welcome to the show, my new friend, Daniel. Hey, Daniel, how you doing, man?
Hey, good, Rick. Thank you so much for having me on the show. And yes, I'm butt-ass naked right now. I jumped out of the womb. I came out just not too long ago with my whole platform of Broken Boner Radio and my website, danielcanfield.com.
Yep. And we met not long ago. And then suddenly we're at this retreat. We just kind of, I don't know, we bonded. And well, I think we're the oldest guys there, number one. So we
true.
That kind of put us in some frame of being the same. But I don't know, there was definitely an affinity. And then as you started to share your story and I shared mine, then bada bing, bada boom, here we are talking about coming out and being with erectile dysfunction. And for you, this has been a lifelong journey, right, man?
Indeed. I've been diagnosed by my doctor, Dr. Erwin Goldstein, here at the San Diego Sexual Medicine Clinic in San Diego. I have what's called corporal erectile tissue fibrosis. Basically, the fibers in my dick don't retain blood. They have fibrosis, and I was born that way. I was born with a 70-year-old dick. Hmm. And it's a condition that most men, as they age, begin to develop. It's just like, you know, your lungs get fibrosis in them as you age, your heart ages. It's just a natural progression. And most men, I've made that claim from stage, that most men will eventually, sometime in their life, start to suffer some form of dysfunction. Yep. And this is one of the types.
Yeah. And so all my gay male listeners just cringed. They're like, oh my God, you got to be kidding. I came out late in life and now I've only got so many years to use this bad puppy. Well, not necessarily true. I know Dan's going to talk about some of this stuff. You know, when did you first know this was an issue? I mean, did you pop out of the womb and like, okay, he's got a bad dick? Or was it, you know, as you went through puberty?
No, actually, I was out of the womb a little bit. I was actually 8, and I'm actually writing a book called Born Limp. And the first chapter is about my experience when I was 8 years old. And just real briefly, I was in a bunch of buddies, you know, around the block, and one of them was talking about their dad. He saw his dick in the shower. He's like, man, my dad's dick is huge and it's hairy. And well, what does yours look like? Does it look like that? And we got in that, I'll show you mine if you show me yours, kind of conversation.
Right.
And it wasn't sexual. 8 years old. We're not really being sexual. It was just like, well, what the fuck you got down there?
Right.
And we all dropped trout. And it was at that moment I noticed everyone else but me had little boners. I was completely limp. And I got teased. You know, and there was another kid who wasn't circumcised. So the two of us kind of got you know, sure. bullied a little bit.
Right. Yep.
But that was my first, very first inkling that I was different than the other boys in that respect.
So there's the parallel. I mean, us gay guys, we get teased because we're different than the other boys too. And I love it when these parallels come forward because people are like, I've been bashed a little bit about, really, Rick, you're going to try to take the coming out lounge and now turn it into talking about coming out stories? And I'm like, you're damn straight I am, because it's the same freaking story. It may be different characters. It may be a different situation. But what you just said, Daniel, is such a perfect example of it. You got teased by the other boys because you were different, just like we got teased by the other boys because we were different. And every one of us that's in a coming out journey, we're getting teased in some way because we are different. So yep. It's the same frickin' closet, people. And there's a whole bunch of us, the whole frickin' planet's in the damn closet. So let's get over it and start helping each other. So
exactly. I talk about that on my platform and on my website that I talk to the masculinity because it shaped my masculinity.
Oh, absolutely.
And I talked to men. I said, you know, I had erectile dysfunction. Everybody's got some type of fucked up dysfunction yep. that causes them grief, whether it's, you know, you're gay or, you know, you grew up with a family that was really mean and angry and that's all you ever knew is a home. We all have a dysfunction. Mm-hmm. Mine was erectile dysfunction.
Well, and the erectile dysfunction then leads to the emotional dysfunction, which then leads to the self-worth dysfunction and the confidence dysfunction, and bada bing, bada boom, there you go.
Yep.
It's a whole freaking exactly. snowball or two, depending on how you want to look at it. And not only can you not get your boner up, you can't get your confidence up.
Exactly. A lot of things don't come up the way they should.
Exactly. So there you are, young 8-year-old, starting to move through this. What happened on your family front? Did they start to go, did you like immediately run to mom and dad and go?
Oh, God, no.
Of course you didn't, God, no. right?
I'm 63. This is back. My dad was from the great generation. You didn't talk about sex in that yep. generation at yep. all. So, you know, and I didn't really have like an epiphany at 8 years old. You don't, you know, your brain's not even done developing, but it was right. just, wow, I was different. I didn't know it was wrong or, you know, dysfunctional, so to speak. I just knew that it was different.
And this is a, you know, you talk about when your dad was raised and the time you were growing up, this was also, not only was it time we didn't talk about sex, but we didn't even think about, okay, should I be thinking this way? I mean, those were the days where it's like, that stuff was just so taboo. You just kind of right. put it away. You know, we talked about cars and we talked about going to church and we talked about right. all these other things, but it had to become something that just really started weighing on you. I mean, you were preteen at that point, pretty much. Then once you got into your teenage life, what started to happen?
Awkward situations mm-hmm. with girls. right. But again, now we're talking late 60s, early 70s when I was in my teens, and erectile dysfunction was still not a topic of conversation. Mm-hmm. So I didn't really know anything was really wrong with me until girls started acting different. I wasn't sexually active until 21. I was a mm-hmm. late bloomer, mm-hmm. probably because of my erectile dysfunction.
Sure.
And I wasn't 100%. That's one thing I teach in my curriculum is there's different levels of dysfunction. You can be less than hard, and that's a form of dysfunction. You can be kind of semi-hard, and then there's the where you're not even hard enough to penetrate. You know, right. that's more severe cases. But my doctor says, you know, up until the actual full hard erection, the knock the brick wall down kind of erection, those are all subtle forms of dysfunction. It wasn't until I started getting weird situations with girls and petting and, you know, mm-hmm. girls touching me and going, you know, am I turning you on? I'm like, oh, God, you have no idea. Betty Sue, I'm like, mm-hmm. I'm totally turned on. She goes, well, you're not hard. Mm. I'm like, oh,
but
sorry.
But I'm assuming from what you've already shared, though, that there was before there was the heavy petting and the girls and, you know, that sexual activity, there had to be the hiding your truth from the, you know, I hate to go there because, you know, well, the political season will have passed by the time this one airs, but you know, the locker room talk, so to speak, it's happening. It's happened to every one of us, you know, and yeah. half of what we as men, and I know girls go through it to a different degree in a different way, but, you know, when the locker room talks about, oh, you got a small dick or, you know, oh, I'm banging such and so, even those kind of conversations, 9 times out of 10 would cause most of us guys to sport some wood. And then there you stand and nothing's happening. So you had to be.
Don't stand.
Yeah. Or don't stand. Yeah. Stand down, young man. It had to have been like, again, where do you turn? Because again, this is not the time in life or in our society where let's sit down and talk sex with Dr. Ruth. That was not even on the horizon yet.
Well, and erectile dysfunction wasn't even, quote unquote, a thing yet.
Yeah.
That didn't really become a thing until Viagra came out, and all of a sudden now they're spending billions of dollars in TV advertising. So, you know, I was still basically in the dark. I just knew I was different. I didn't know it had a name.
Yeah.
You know, I went through a phase where I thought, oh, maybe I'm gay. Mm. You know, girls aren't making me hard.
Yep.
So I experimented and found out, nope. Gay, straight, doesn't matter. That wasn't the stimulus that was missing.
Nothing is making it come stand at attention.
Nope.
Wow.
Or so, at least not sufficiently. Again, I fathered three young boys.
Right.
You know, they're grown men now. But so I obviously had some functionality, but in the classic terms of talking about erectile dysfunction, I had an issue.
So as you get through high school, you're in college, you're starting to, you know, move forward, you get married. Talk a little bit about, I mean, we see the childhood emotional stuff, but now here we go, the masculinity. You're a man. You're the husband. How does this begin to really affect you in that realm?
And I tell men this all the time. I built an amazing, if you met me back then, you'd go, this guy's a stud. He's got the sexy haircut, the modern clothes, the cool car, the Irish setter in the back seat, which was really hot back in that day. I always bought the shit that you're supposed to have.
Right.
Matter of fact, it was funny because women, you know, I'd meet women in bars and, you know, we'd talk and they're like, oh, you know, I'm not going to, you look like a player. Mm-hmm. I would just die laughing, thinking, girl, you have no fucking idea.
Yeah.
Because what's going on right here is about as far as it's going to go.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would break off conversations out of pure panic that I don't want this to go any further because it's going to get embarrassing. Well, and this is back in the 70s where, you know, you take girls home, you don't use condoms back then.
Right. And this is also, here's another parallel. This is the exact thing that happens to most of us that are hiding in the closet as our gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender selves. It's like, okay, we can play the game. We're playing the game. We're playing the game. Okay, stop. The game has to stop here because we're about to enter the danger zone. Right. What if I end up going home, or what if she crops a feel and I can't do this because I'm gay or I'm a lesbian? It's the same thing. And again, I'm so amazed that people are like, really, this is just a gay lesbian thing. No, it's not. Here's the perfect parallel. It's kind of amazing how much we're so much alike as human beings.
I mean, I was accused of being gay.
Yep.
You know, and you and I talked about the gay culture because I had some questions about the mindset of men, that you have two men together in this, there might be a little more empathy because it's another man. But when I was with other girls, I mean, they'd go into their head like, what the fuck's wrong with me? What did I do wrong? Do I smell? Does my pussy smell? Why?
Right.
You know, what have I done? Are my skills not good enough? And I'm sitting here going, you know, I want to punch something.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
A pillow or a wall. I'm so pissed. I'm pissed at my dick. I'm pissed at myself. I'm embarrassed. I'm like, now I feel less than a man. All this big facade that I put out in front. About, you know, I'm a player. I'm perceived as a player. And now I can't deliver. That fucked me up.
Well, of course it did. And then you've got that all going on, which is all around the sexual stuff. And then I know for me as a gay man, when I used to find myself in those weird situations, then I started questioning everything else about my freaking life, too. It's like, well, if this is broken, maybe this is why this is. And the snowball effect started all over again. And then I would just go hibernate, literally go hibernate. Don't do anything. Don't even attempt to go out. Always have an excuse why I couldn't go out with people, you know.
Right.
And then life just became a real bitch.
Yep. I kept from hanging out with groups of guys.
Oh, I'm sure.
Because it fucking killed me. And they're like, oh, man. And I know now as an adult looking back, they probably fabricated half of what they were saying. But they're like, oh, yeah, I went out with this girl and we fucked for hours. And I fucked all night long. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Yeah. And I get tired of being in that environment. So I isolated from having a lot of male friends.
Hmm. And, you know, I have to say, this is something that I don't know if people can, I think they're getting the idea of the magnitude of this. But I have to say, when I met you at the retreat we were at, it was pretty amazing to see you be so open about this. And it was a moment I had of, yes, this guy gets what it really means to be just who you are. Yep. And I, you know, at that point in time, nobody knew where I was going because I, you know, I was second day talking to all of you guys. But I thought, you know, this guy, he literally has a lot of balls, even if they don't work right, to be able to just stand.
Okay.
Yeah, the balls are okay. Exactly. But it takes a lot of balls to be able to stand here in a group of men and say, yes, this is who I am. And then I immediately thought, wow, this guy is very much like us in the gay community because he's dealing with the same masculinity stuff that we do. It's just pointed in a different space in his life. Well, it's actually pointed in the same space, just a different angle, you know? Right.
Exactly. And I'm very proud to stand with all of you in the gay community. I mean, it's like the parallels are unparalleled.
Well, they are. And the thing is, you know, as we started talking, and this is really one of the big reasons that I wanted to have you come and speak on the podcast was because now take the same sex course here. Two guys together. What is the most important thing that, quote unquote, sexually you're going to want working? It's your dick. Because this seems to be the thing that, you know, if anybody is going to suppose what attracts gay men to gay men, okay, yes, it's our penises. We like that. That doesn't mean that's everything. But between the penis and the ass, that's kind of the sexual equivalent to the penis and the vagina. So, oh, and that doesn't work? Oh, sorry, not sure I'm interested. And I think this is happening much more frequently in my community than is being talked about.
That's what shocked me when we talked. And again, I thought a gay man would be more empathetic to his partner because we kind of go through the same fears. Like one of the biggest fears I've found through all my research and men I've interviewed, one of their biggest fears is in an intimate situation, am I going to be able to get erect? Mm-hmm. And if I do, is it going to last? Or if it didn't work, then it's like, oh shit, is that the last boner I'm ever going to get? Mm.
But here's what's interesting about the parallels. Those thoughts are all the same. But I think here's another parallel that most people may not be putting together. You're laying there in bed, guy with guy. Your guy can't get it up. Well, if you're a man laying in bed and the woman's like, my guy can't get it up, what is one of the first things a woman is thinking? He doesn't love me. I don't turn him on. He's having an affair. Well, guess what? Those same exact thoughts are happening in the male-to-male relationship.
Wow.
Those are the first questions. Then you overlay, and again, I don't have a lot of proof to back this up other than a few casual conversations I've had in my own community of guys that I know are using Viagra to get it up because they've got, that's the only way they can do it. And I'm going to share a story about one of those guys momentarily. But what I do know is, when you have that happening in that moment, you overlay the societal belief, which all of us gay men carry. And anybody who says they don't carry this, I'm going to call bullshit on you because it's there. It's in me, even though I feel like I've transcended a lot of this stuff. We carry forward the societal belief that all gay men want to do is fuck. And you overlay that on top of a broken boner. And it's like you just took everything else that a woman would think about their man's penis not working, and you overlay it that now you're also a disappointment to society, to the gay community, that you're not man enough to do this. Oof. It's like a tsunami.
Well, it's interesting you say that because one of my speaking points, too, is there's in my feelings is there's way too much emphasis put on a man's erection.
Yes.
You know, I think I showed that in the And when I got up and spoke in front of the group that, you know, one measure of our masculinity is the girth, length, and longevity of our dicks. Really? But we've been societized to believe that if you don't get an erection, you're not really a man. Well, there's 1,000 other ways to be intimate with somebody. But we've been preconditioned to say, well, the first way, especially for a man, is to throw the high, hard one.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I use some analogies now because I love sports. I'm like, you know, the best pitchers in baseball usually just don't throw a fastball. You know, they need the curve. They need the slider or a golfer. You don't hit every shot with your driver.
Right.
You know, you have to learn the nuances and skills of intimacy. And it isn't always just wrapped around a big dick.
Right. Well, and I think that's the thing is, yes, there are size queens in the gay community. That's probably one of the stereotypes that many people out in the world go, oh, yeah, all gay men care about is the size of a guy's cock. Okay, that can be true, but it depends. I know guys that are like, yes, I'm concerned about the size. I don't want it big. I need a small one. There's other guys that it's like size is everything. Then there's those who are like, I don't know what I would do with that. If that showed up, I don't know what I would do. And I think these are the misconceptions that we as a society have overlaid onto this is a badge of masculinity is how big, girth, everything this is, and how well it works. Then that's a sign of how much of a man you are. And in my world, I don't see it that way. Yes, do I like my dick? Of course I do, but not just my dick. I like dick, period. But I'll clarify that because everybody's going to like, oh, he really does love himself. Well, yes, I do love myself and I care for myself. But there's
at least
more...
a couple times a day you love yourself.
Well, exactly.
Like
exactly. But I think it's important to really start to redefine so much of what's happening in this world is redefining what makes a man.
Right.
Because when we start to get rid of some of these stereotypes and these beakers of masculinity, so to speak, that, okay, this beaker is the masculinity beaker and every man has to have this. Really? Maybe we don't. Maybe we go, okay, we are who we are and this is how I project my masculinity. This is how you project your masculinity. This is how I manifest who I am as a man. And guess what? It isn't just about what's hanging down between my legs.
Exactly. I mean, I had to learn to develop other skills. I developed an amazing skill of oral sex and using my hands and finding other ways to be intimate with women, because either that or I was going to be a lonely guy stuck in a corner somewhere with, you know, no sex life. And I was too sexual. The ironic part of this is I hypersexualized myself. Mm-hmm. I tried everything under the planet of scenarios and things to figure out, okay, what's going to really make me get a boner? So I was putting myself in situations I had no business being in, but I did them anyway. And I found ways to be very sexual without a full erection all the time. You know, a lot of women like that about me. Mm. Now, women who just wanted the high hard one, that didn't last long.
Well, yeah, but that's when you go, okay, it's like the perfect ideal client. If this doesn't work for you, then we're not meant to be here. That's just
right.
The way it is, you know.
Right.
But I can't help but think that this is also an effect on the women. You know, we've already talked about the, you know, okay, wow, what is it about me? But then there's this other piece that we haven't really addressed yet where for a lot of women, getting their guy off and getting him hard is part of the sexual excitement for them. So how do you navigate that?
Well, that's a part of the sad narrative about the society telling us that, because women learn that too. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, if he's got an erection, then I've turned him on. And what I kept trying to tell women, I was turned on. I'm like, don't look at my, you know, the old butterball turkeys you buy and it's got that little orange pop-up thing.
Yeah.
When it's done, that pops up.
Yeah.
Women treat men like that. It's like, well, if you don't have a boner, I haven't turned you on. And for me, because I had erectile dysfunction, it couldn't have been farther from the truth.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they're societized to believe that. It's funny. I was at a big conference just this last week. There's 800 people in the room. And I got to talk to a lot of them. Because we did workshops where we'd break off in groups of 5 or 10. I was talking to a lot of these young women. A lot of them were young millennial women. And they're like, oh, erectile dysfunction. Oh, my gosh. It was kind of embarrassing. But, you know, I broke through like I do. And we talked about it. And they said, well, you know, I don't think I've ever really been with a guy. And I'd laugh. I said, well, are you bragging? You're so good. You've never had a guy not perform for you. But the deeper narrative was, I said, you've probably been touched by ED and didn't even know it. Here's how that happened. When I was younger, when I was single, I'd be in situations, and this could go for the gay community as well. So guys out there, you might have experienced the same thing. I'd get in this great conversation with somebody, that chemistry's flowing, where you can just tell, you could cut the atmosphere with a knife. Like, this is turning out really sexy and really well. All of a sudden, I would end the conversation. You know what, honey, I'm having a great time with you, but I've got to get to, my friend's house or what have you. I'm out the door.
Yeah.
And I know that I left her standing there going, what the fuck just happened?
Mm-hmm.
Well, my ED touched her, because I came to the realization, like you mentioned earlier, when you're gay, you realize, oh shit, this isn't going to go well.
Right.
So I'm going to back away from it. And I told these women, I said, that's how you've been touched by ED. And every one of them, you could see it in their eyes. They're going back in their short history and going, oh, you could just tell they were remembering situations where that happened.
Well, and what I think is appropriate to also bring into this at this point, I was going to say sad, but it's not, because I think it's something where we learn in this moment, is I bet a lot of those women immediately went into a couple of different places. It's either me and I'm not pretty enough, I'm not good enough, my tits aren't big enough, my ass isn't, but, you know, blah, 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 whatever it is, or what a f***ing asshole. You know, you just let me on, da, da, da.
He's and married.
He's married.
He's an asshole.
He's
married.
Got a girlfriend. He's just in town for, you know, da, 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 da. And it's so interesting when we go, okay, but then what's the other possible narratives? We don't ever ask, what are the other possible narratives? It's either this or this. It's either yin or yang. But we don't go into the gray. Let's not go into the gray, because then we don't really know. Right. And I think that's what you just brought up, Daniel, in such a beautiful way, is in that gray is where the truth often lies.
Yep.
And it's
I'm leaving
not
the gray people. You just gave me a new mantra. That's I'm diving into the gray space.
I think it fits. Space. You know, it's one of those things where you don't make the assumption until you know that that assumption is ready to be made. And by the time you know it's an assumption to be made, it's actually the truth. There is no assumption. It's here's the truth in this situation.
Yep.
And I know in my own experience that as I have had sexual encounters, and there have been guys in my sexual history that I really enjoyed the time with them, but I just, it didn't happen. The erection didn't happen at all. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, fuck, why not? I really turned on by him. It just, you know, da, 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 da. And I've had enough experience to know this is just what happens. And especially now that I'm 50 something, this is definitely what happens at times. But then I start doing my own weird little mind on myself, and I realize how much worse that makes it. To the point,
it becomes systemic.
It does become systemic, because then if I want to meet up with those guys again, as soon as I get excited about seeing them, then the next thing that comes into my mind is, oh, yeah, but well, am I going to perform? Is it going to happen? Is it not? And by the time we meet, I've already done psyched myself out of it. Which probably wasn't really what was wrong. I just put the extra pressure on, and now it's really not going to do anything.
Well, that's what I'm excited about. My passion is, my new purpose in life is on my website and stuff. There's going to be things for men to dive into, to learn. Like you just mentioned, you didn't know what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And that problem, the brain freeze that it caused for you, made it even worse. So many men don't, well, the world doesn't really understand the depth and breadth of erectile dysfunction.
Right.
They see the commercials, oh, ED, blue pill.
Right.
Well, no, there's so much more to it. There's so many different causes of erectile dysfunction. Some of them are biological, some are psychosocial, some are skeletal muscular. But there's a way to systematically go through a process. And I've created something called the Edwin process, which is what I went through. It'll help men get through the process and dive deep into what's going on. So at least you know. And then once you know and you get diagnosed by a proper physician, and get the proper whatever, whether it's pills or injections or what. There's so many things out there to help, or psychological help, if it's psychological.
You know, it's interesting as you're talking about that, because I remember when I was very focused on being the coming out coach, which I still do all that work. It's just I've brought everything under one umbrella under my name. But I remember my last coming out coach website. I had basically three entry points into, okay, how do I start figuring stuff out? The first window was, I'm just confused. I don't know if I'm gay or not. I'm just confused. The second window was, okay, I think I'm gay, but I'm just not really ready to talk about that with anybody yet. And the third window was, okay, I know I'm gay. I'm ready to come out. I just need help doing that. And it's kind of the same pathway that I can see men with erectile dysfunction going with, you know, I'm really confused. I'm not sure what's going on, but I need to start finding out. And then, okay, I realize this is what's happening, but I'm not ready to really get out there, talk about it, you know, admit to it. Da, da, da. And okay, this is what's my truth. And now let's be really clear about this so I can improve my life and move forward. It's the admitting, okay, this is me. This is who I am.
Yep.
As soon as we can admit it, doesn't mean suddenly it's easy riding. It's just, okay, you've made that step. Now, what can we start doing? What else can we start admitting to? Do I need help? Do I want help? How do I want help? But you got to just finally admit, this is what's happening. This is my truth.
Yep. And that's one of the first parts of my acronym in Edwin. The E is embrace.
Mm-hmm.
You educate yourself and find out really what's going on.
Yep.
But then you embrace it. And then once you embrace it, it's like, okay, Now I can deal with this because I know what it is. Mm-hmm. And knowledge is power. And my whole platform is about providing as much knowledge as I can. It's such a broad topic, and it has so many, you know, things in it that nobody understands it. My Dr. Goldstein, that's on my website, he gets so upset because sexual medicine is so lacking in this country. There's only a handful of hospitals in the United States that have a sexual medicine department. Mm-hmm. Alvarado Hospital here in San Diego happens to be one, and he heads that. But it's woefully, I mean, you'd think in 2016, 2017, we'd be a little more progressive in this. But no, it's sorely lacking.
Well, because this is still one of those quote unquote dirty little things. Let's not talk about it.
Yep.
You know, which is unfortunate because to me, sexuality and sex are as much a part of me as my height, my bald head, my love of wine. That's just another facet of me. So why are we ashamed of this as human beings to say, yeah, this is what we are? But it's because we have been shamed into this belief from society that these are the things we don't talk about.
You want me to throw some staggering statistics at you?
Oh, I'd love them.
Your listeners might be interested. It's kind of like the gay community. You know, you don't talk about it. Nobody talked going back several years with the gay community. You just, everyone lived in the closet.
Yep.
And then as you all started coming out, you're all going, holy fuck, there's a lot of us like this. Well, there's over 20 million men in America who suffer some form of erectile dysfunction. 20 million. Mm. I just saw a thing today in one of the medical journals. It said that 26% of men under 40 suffer some form of erectile dysfunction. And over half of those suffer severe erectile dysfunction. We're talking millennials. I just interviewed on my podcast today, I interviewed a young man who got a penile implant at age 20.
Wow.
He's a millennial. He's now 27. And we had fun talking about it because he's single. I've had mine since I was married, so I don't know what it's like to have a penile implant and be single. But he was able to share some of his fun stories about being single with one. But it's devastating. I saw some statistics. I think it was less than 7 million men in America suffer from cancer. Hmm. Only 7 million. We're talking 30 million men have some form of ED.
It's amazing.
Now, we'll talk about cancer all day long.
All right. But what's ED, so interesting about something like ED is I'm going to get hate on this one. It's as invasive as cancer because it brings the same emotional trauma as cancer does. And I know some people would say, no, it doesn't. Yes, it does. Yeah, when it does. You can't be who you are, when you don't fit into the mold of what has been constructed as a masculine man, trust me, I'm sure there are many a man, and I've been in the situations myself when my penis isn't performing, going, fuck it, I might as well just be dead right now. Because if this thing ain't working, nothing works. It's kind of like when mom is happy, everybody's happy. When the penis is happy, everybody's happy, so to speak.
I always talk about ED is more than a bedroom issue.
It is.
It leads into your business life,
yep,
personal life, everything.
Yep, every bit of it. Every bit of it. So,
and men suffer. They live in silence, just like a lot of gay men do.
Well, and that's why
I'm so proud of you for having the Coming Out Lounge, because there's so many parallels there. But
there is. And this is why I love that we've had this conversation, because I want to keep demonstrating to people that it's time. You know, I told you at the retreat, and I've said this to my listeners numerous times, it's time for us to start bridging the coming out journeys. They're all the same. They may be situationally different. You will have your own experience, but at the core of what this is about people having the opportunity to stand in their power and say, this is me. This is me. I am not ashamed. There's no guilt. This is who I am. And the more we do this with each other, to me, the better we are as a planet.
Absolutely. I stand with you, brother.
Yeah, I know that. And that's why we're here. We're going to have Daniel's information all up on the site, everything. And I know, you know what? We'll probably be having you on again because we didn't touch on, you know, guys who use the drugs just for performance, who have no ED dysfunction going on and, you know, all that sort of stuff. But I think it's just so important to start having these conversations of what does it look like when you're hiding in these closets, closets that people don't always assume are truly a closet.
Yep.
Awesome stuff, man. So one of the questions I always ask my guests as we wrap up is, you know, if somebody's out there hiding in the closet, doesn't matter what their closet is, what would be something you'd love to leave them with to encourage them to just get really real with themselves and take that step to say, yeah, this is me, I'm coming out.
Just stand in your truth. I mean, when I came out with this, you know, I was scared.
Yep.
But I have been so embraced and so loved that I have the balls to do this. And the culture is changing slowly but surely, and the gay community is really leading on this front of people just coming out and being themselves. Just do it.
Yep.
Stop f***ing around and come out and stand bold and face the ridicule. You're going to get some. It's going to happen. Just know, I mean, living your truth and just being open about who you are is so empowering. And, you know, I'm 63 years old. I've run 4 successful businesses in my lifetime. I have never felt more empowered. I always tell people I'm 25 with 38 years of experience. Yep. I have never felt more like a 25-year-old than I do now, because I'm in my purpose, I'm in my truth, and it's just amazing.
Mm-hmm. It is amazing. And I was, you know, listening to a podcast this morning when I was out exercising, and a sentence that just hit me when the guy said the words, it hit me so big, was how much more our energy becomes amplified when our energy is being spent on the truth instead of being spent on the false truth.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, wow. Man, that just hit me like, okay, this man is talking my language, because this is exactly what I'm talking about all the time, is we spend so much energy trying to hide those pieces of ourselves that we think people shouldn't see because they were not going to fit in. But if we take that energy and put it into the I don't give a fuck bucket and just live ourselves, our energy just goes up tremendously, because we're no longer dumping it in buckets that don't matter. We're putting it in the buckets that do matter, and we step into our fullest power when we allow that energy to amplify our truth rather than to de-amplify the false truth.
Yeah. Amen, brother.
Well, hey, man, I so appreciate you being on here and spending time with us. I know this one will probably get a lot of action because of, well, we don't give a fuck and we talked our truth today. So I appreciate you being here, man.
My pleasure. I'd love to come back.
Okay, cool. Hey, 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 Closet Dwellers and Coming Out Lounge listeners. I wanted to invite you to check something out. You know, for all the years that I've been a Coming Out coach, one thing I've learned is sometimes people come to do the work with me and they only need a little bit of help to get over something very particular and very important to them. It could be reconciling their religion and sexuality. Maybe it's learning how to have the difficult conversations where they say, I'm gay. Possibly it could be, oh my God, I'm out of the closet, but now how do I do this same-sex dating and mating sort of thing? Well, what I can tell you is throughout the years, there are common things that show up over and over and over again. And what I've heard most from my clients and listeners of the podcast is, I want a way to work with you just on these particular subjects. Yay, I am so excited because I've taken the action and I've made this possible. So how do you find out about these particular programs? You go to thecomingoutcoach.com, or if you're on the show page right now listening to the podcast or have just listened to the podcast, over to the right-hand side of the podcast description or anything is an icon that says one-on-one coaching sessions. Click on that button, you'll be taken to a page that describes each of the different 9 sessions I'm offering. They are one-on-one sessions that we can do via phone, Skype, or even FaceTime. They're very action-oriented. We go right to the topic that you want to talk about. And each of these sessions also includes a copy of my book, Frankly, My Dear, I'm Gay. So what more could you ask for? You get me for 90 minutes devoted to you, plus my book. So go check it out. See if there's something that could help you as you step out, step up, and step in to living your powerful truth. Take care. I'm Rick Clemens, the Coming Out Coach. I look forward to working with you.
You've just experienced the Coming Out Lounge. Go online to www.comingoutlounge.com to learn more. And tune in again next week for more stories and tips for being true to yourself.